Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. Good to be here with you. Good to have you with us, whether you're in person or online. And to start things out, I'll let you know I got really, really good news. The message will be about 5 minutes. Maybe. 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 So, not long after our son was born, he turned into what we affectionately called a glowworm, because his bilirubin level had gone high, and as a result of his bilirubin, we had to wrap him in a blanket that had this glow light, and he would lay in the floor, and he would glow. When we took him to a blood draw to have the bilirubin levels checked, we walked in, got all set, and the nurse took us back, and the nurse told me to lay him down on the table. And when I laid him down on the table, he was crying, and she said, "Okay, Dad, you hold him down." So she had me like almost laying on top of him, holding him down, and he's just screaming, and it's breaking my heart. And she goes, "It's okay, let him cry." And then she said, "The more he cries, the easier my job is. Because the more he cried, the more his blood flowed. The more his blood flowed, the easier it was for her to get his blood out to test the bilirubin level." So I turned to the nurse and I punched her square in the face. No, I did not. I did not do that. But I will tell you that to this day, that nurse, who I don't even know her name, I don't remember her beyond anything beyond that story, but she is one of my least favorite nurses of all the nurses I've ever experienced. As our kids grew up and they started needing immunization shots and stuff like that, when you take your kid to the doctor to get a shot and they're scared because they don't like the needles and they're afraid that it's going to hurt, what do you tell them? You tell them it won't hurt, which is a lie, by the way. You tell them, "I need you to be brave. I need you to be brave." And I'm sure that somewhere along the line when our kids had immunizations, we told them that we needed them to be brave. But there are other times in life where we need to be brave. There are times in life that are tough and challenging and situations and circumstances when we need to be brave. Like when your kid gets their learner's permit. And you move from the driver's seat to the passenger seat. It requires you to be brave, or when your grandson gets his, right? Or when your friend buys you this bottle of hot sauce and says that this hot sauce will light you up, and you have to muster the courage and the bravery. Bravery is required to try the new hot sauce, even if it takes how many weeks since you've got the hot sauce? How many weeks since you've got the hot sauce? 2 weeks and you still can't try the hot sauce. There are circumstances in life where bravery is required. And that is the story of a lady by the name of Esther in the Old Testament part of the Bible, which centers around the nation of Israel, God's relationship with Israel, God's desire to extend relationship with humankind beyond Israel through his relationship with Israel. But there was a season in the nation of Israel's life where they were under the rule of the nation of Persia. And it was during a time when a guy by the name of Xerxes, which is just a fun name, was king over Persia. And King Xerxes decides at one point in his reign to throw this like all-out party. And this party goes on for a long time. And as that party draws to a close, Xerxes has another idea. He goes, "I think I'm going to throw a second party. And this one's going to be in the palace. And this party is going to last for 7 days. And so on the seventh day of the party, Xerxes has what seems like to him at the time a good idea. And through this story, we'll see indicators of people that do things that seem like a good idea at the time that turn out not to be such a good idea. Anybody ever have that in their life? Seemed like a good idea at the time and then turned out not to be. So we'll see that a number of times in the story. Now, what exactly made Xerxes think that this was a good idea? I haven't yet wrapped my mind around. But what Xerxes decides is that he wants his wife, Queen Vashti, to be brought into the party and dance for all of the people to entertain them. And really what he wants is he wants all of the men in the room to ogle his beautiful wife. So he sends the order, because, you know, he's the king, and kings issue orders. So he issues the order to have Vashti come in and dance and entertain all the males in his party so that they can ogle her. Again, seemed like a good idea at the time, but this doesn't sit very well with Vashti. In fact, in Esther 1:12 it says, "But when they conveyed the king's order to Queen Vashti, she refused to come." Now, it's interesting because no one refused the king. The king issued the order and people did what the king said. That's just the way it worked. No one defied the king. But Vashti refused to come. And this made the king furious. And he burned with anger. He is so upset. And I mean, if you think about this, he's the king. People do what the king wants. Whatever the king says, people do whenever he says it. But Vashti refuses to come. He has no concern that his order is going to humiliate her. He has no concern. His order is all about what he wants. And Vashti refuses, and he gets mad. So he says, well, what do I do about this? He seeks his counselors and says, no one defies the king, and something has to be done to punish Vashti for defying the king. So what do I do? Well, one of his guys says, here's what you need to do. You need to issue a decree. And there's part of a king issuing a decree in this day that I still don't understand, because there are multiple times where it says the king issued a decree that could not be revoked. So the king made a law that the king couldn't undo, but yet the king could do whatever they wanted. But apparently there were things the king couldn't do after they issued this law. And so this guy says, issue a decree that stands for all time. And basically the decree was going to banish Vashti from the king. And here's what it says. It says, it should order that Queen Vashti be forever banished from the presence of King Xerxes, and that the king should choose another queen more worthy than she. I mean, the short translation is the king needs to find a queen who will do what she wants, what he wants her to do whenever he wants her to do it. And if the queen won't do, then you banish her forever. And this would change Vashti's life completely in a lot of ways. And so as again, another good idea at the time, Xerxes says, sounds like a good idea. I think I'll do that. So he issues this order, and almost immediately after issuing the order, he realizes what he's done, and he regrets it. But for whatever reason, the law can't be reversed, the decree can't be revoked, and so he's stuck. Vashti is banished from his presence, and so his advisors realize that he regrets it, and some of them come up with an idea. They say, let us search the empire. So everywhere that Xerxes control, they're going to search the empire to find beautiful young virgins, and the word translated there, virgins, can just sometimes be translated women, though in that culture, they probably actually were virgins, for the king. After that, the young woman who most pleases the king will be made queen instead of Vashti. So this is when the story crosses the path of a young lady by the name of Esther. Esther is a Jewish young lady, and she's one of the women that is brought into the circle of women to compete for the position of queen. Now, the story doesn't give us any indication that Esther ever desired to be queen. It doesn't give us any indication that she sought this position out. It's when the people went out among the entire empire to find people they thought would suit the king. Esther was one of them that they brought in. And so it says, as a result of the king's decree, Esther, along with many other young women, was brought to the king's harem. So Esther is one of many at the fortress of Susa and placed in Haggai's care. Haggai was an attendant of the king, and all of these women are brought in. Esther is put into Haggai's care. I don't know if all the others were, but before being presented to the king, Esther and all the other women had to go through 12 months of beauty treatment before they were able to be presented to the king. And so Esther, in that 12-month time, very much impressed Haggai and wound up and kind of began to elevate in the ranks of the harem. And so eventually, she's brought before the king. She's brought before the king, and the king takes pleasure in Esther. He's impressed by her and all of that. And then the story gets really, really interesting because we get introduced to a guy named Haman. Haman is someone who served in the king's court. And here's what it tells us about Haman. All the officials, all the king's officials would bow down before Haman to show him respect whenever he passed by, for so the king had commanded. Haman's a big deal. I mean, all the king's officials, when Haman walked by, people would bow down. I mean, when I walk by, people laugh. I'm not exactly sure there's a big difference. But the reason they did is because the king had commanded it. Haman was in such a position that the king said, he's in such a position in my thing, that when he passes by, everyone will bow down. So now let's go to the next slide. But Mordecai refused to bow down or show him respect. Now, interesting thing about Mordecai. Mordecai is a Jewish man. Mordecai is also just happens to be Esther's uncle, who had raised Esther and gave Esther counsel. Now, as Esther was going through the 12 months and being brought before the king, Mordecai and Esther had been in contact. And Mordecai had told Esther, "Do not tell anyone that you're a Jewish person. Just stay in the flow of things and go with things, but don't tell anybody you're Jewish." So what you have is Haman in the king's administration, so to speak, that everybody bows down to. But you have Mordecai, who refuses to bow down and show respect. Well, as you might imagine, for somebody like Haman, that becomes a problem. Haman gets upset at the fact that that Mordecai won't bow down. It says, when Haman saw that Mordecai would not bow down or show him respect, he was filled with rage. Haman is so upset that he decides something has to be done. Mordecai has to pay. And so it says, he, meaning Haman, had learned of Mordecai's nationality. So he decided it was not enough to lay hands on Mordecai alone. Instead, he looked for a way to destroy all the Jews throughout the entire empire of Xerxes. Haman hates Mordecai and feels so disrespected by Mordecai that not only does Mordecai have to pay, but anyone like Mordecai has to pay. In fact, it's almost like one of those things where I'm mad at you, so I'm going to punish them to make a point to you, and I'm going to make everybody miserable. I'm going to make everybody pay for what you did, because that's the position Haman's in. Haman can basically do what he wants. He's so high up in the kingdom that he can issue decrees and he can make things happen and people do what Haman says. So it's just an incredibly fascinating story, because Haman, let me get my thoughts, sorry. It's kicking around in there. Haman had gotten to where he was able to issue a decree that all of he provides false information to the king about the Jews. Tells them that they're in defiance and rebellion and all that. So he convinces Xerxes to issue a decree that about a year from now, all of the enemies of the Jews can attack them and kill them in every province and every region. So this is a time of real insecurity and real volatility for the nation of Israel. If someone doesn't intervene, then the entire nation of Israel is going to be destroyed. If someone doesn't step in, if someone doesn't influence the king, then something is bad is definitely going to happen to the nation of Israel, to the point that there will be no nation of Israel left anymore. Now, who can influence a king? That's right, a queen. A queen can influence a king. Except, one of the things that we need to be aware of in this story is that the previous queen had been banished for not obeying the king. And while it seems that Esther might be in a position, because by this time Esther has actually been made queen, but it seems like Esther may be in the position, she recognizes that her position may be tenable at best. And it says, then Esther sent for Hatchik. I don't know who this guy is, but he's one of the king's eunuchs who had been appointed to Esther as her attendant. And it says that she sent for him, had him brought in, and then has a message sent to Mordecai to find out what was troubling him. So she has Hatchik send a message to Mordecai to find out what was troubling him and why he was in mourning. And Mordecai sends a message back to her and says, I'm upset because an issue or a decree has been issued that will have all of the Jewish people eradicated. I'm concerned. When news of the decree went through the empire, obviously the Jewish people were concerned, including Mordecai. And so Mordecai sent word back to her and says, this is why I'm upset. And then he gives some of the counsel that is something that we hold on to, even when we don't even know this is where it originated. It says, so Mordecai gave Hatchik a copy of the decree issued in Susa that called for the death of all the Jews. He asked Hatchik to show it to Esther and explain the situation to her. He also asked Hatchik direct her to go to the king to beg for mercy and plead for her people. Now, previously, he had told her not to reveal her Jewish identity. And now he's telling her, go to the king. And here's the thing, no one goes to the king uninvited. And so Esther sends word back and says, all the king's officials and even the people in the provinces know that anyone who appears before the king in his inner court without being invited is doomed to die. So Mordecai has told her, go and beg the king for your people. And she comes back and says, but if I go to the king and I'm uninvited, I'm doomed to die. And then she goes on to say, unless the king holds out his gold scepter. So if you come into the king and the king holds out his gold scepter, your life is spared. And she said, and the king has not called for me to come to him for 30 days. So while it seems Esther may be in a position, she's not invited, she hasn't been invited in 30 days, and so her going to the king is tenuous at best. And so Mordecai says to her, if you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance and relief for the Jews will arise from some other place, but you and your relatives will die. So Mordecai says, if not you, God's going to deliver us. God's going to do something. But if you don't do this, you and all your relatives will die. What's Mordecai's relationship to Esther? Uncle. So what he's telling her is, if you don't do this, I die. And remember, I raised you. Remember, I gave you counsel. Remember, I don't know that he's doing that because we do that, because we like to guilt people into doing what we want them to do. And so remember everything I did for you, and after everything I did for you, come on, I'm just asking this one thing. Just go to the king, beg for the people. He might kill you, but just remember all the things I did for you. I mean, that's what we do. I don't know that that's what Mordecai's doing in this particular case. But he's telling her very clear, this is going to happen. And it can happen either with you or it can happen without you. And if it happens without you, you and all your relatives will die. And then he tells her, who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this. It's almost like Mordecai is saying, what if God knew? What if God knew that the Jewish people were going to find themselves in this situation? And what if God knew that you were going to find favor with the king? And what if God knew that you were going to be put in the position of being the queen? And what if God knew that you would be the one that would be able to go to Xerxes and convince him to change things with this? Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for such a time as this? So Esther sends word back to Mordecai and says, have all the Jewish people in the empire and in Susa, have them fast for 3 days. Have them pray for me and set the stage and prepare whatever needs to be prepared. But have them pray about this. And then she says, and then, though it is against the law, I will go in to see the king. And if I must die, I must die. So the interesting thing about this dynamic is you've got all this going on and there's still this guy in the wings named Haman who hates Mordecai and has a plan set in motion to completely annihilate the Jewish people. As the story unfolds, Esther invites the king and Haman to a banquet. And she doesn't give the reason why, but then Haman is bragging to his friends. He's telling them about his position and how powerful he is. He's telling about all the possessions that he has, and he's telling them that I've got this special invitation to a banquet from the queen, and it's just me and the king, and I'm so special. The queen wants just me and the king to be together and have this special banquet. And then in the middle of bragging about all those things that's going on, he all of a sudden says, but all this is all worth nothing as long as I see Mordecai the Jew just sitting there at the palace gate. Haman hates Mordecai so much that he can't stand to see him sit at the gate. He hates Mordecai so much that he can't even see the good things in his life. He's sitting there bragging about his position. He's bragging about his possessions. He's bragging about this special banquet that he's been invited to by the queen. And then he says, but none of that matters. None of that matters as long as that Mordecai the Jew is sitting at the palace gate. And then he decides that he can't wait the year for the decree to take in effect. And so he has a 75-foot gallows built, and he's gonna have Mordecai hung on the gallows. Now, another thing that's interesting about the whole dynamic is, previously, Mordecai had earned the favor of the king. Mordecai had overheard two people plotting to assassinate the king. And he sent word through Esther to the king about the assassination plot. And Xerxes was able to thwart the assassination plot and have the two guys who were going to assassinate him impaled on a pole. So, that has gone on. And Haman has this problem. Mordecai has found favor with the king, and Esther's going to go and talk to the king. So all this is going on. The banquet still hasn't happened yet. And one night the king can't sleep. And he calls and has the record of the kingdom read to him. And yeah, I mean, if you think about it, he has the record of the kingdom read to him because it's all about him. And read to me my accomplishments. Read to me everything about me. If you sat and read everything about me, I would probably be sure to fall asleep. So anyway, he all of a sudden they get to the part of the story where Mordecai had told him about the assassination plot. And the king says, well, what was ever done to reward Mordecai for such a thing? And he learns that nothing had been done. And he said, well, something needs to be done. So let's figure out what needs to be done to Mordecai. And he goes, oh, look, out the window. I don't know if this is out the window. I make stuff up all the time. He says, look, out the window, there's Haman. Have Haman come in. I want to have a conversation with him. So he brings Haman in and he says, Haman, what should be done for someone who's pleased the king? And Haman's like, this is my shot. He's talking about me. I get to tell him what needs to be done for the king. So he tells him. He says, here's what needs to be done for somebody who pleases the king. They need to be dressed in the royal robes. They need to be fully ornamented. And they need to be put on a horse that the king himself has rode. And they need to be escorted through the town. And as they're escorted through the town, people need to cheer and people need to ooh and people need to ah and people need to make them feel good, because that's what needs to be done for someone who has pleased the king. The king says, you know what, Haman? This is a great idea. He says, excellent. Quick. I love that. Quick. Take the robes and my horse and do just as you have said for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the gate of the palace. And Haman goes, seriously, for Mordecai the Jew? I know he sits at the gate of the palace, because every time I see him there, I hate that guy. I don't know if he said that. I'm guessing he said that. He says, leave out nothing you have suggested. What an incredible twist and turn in the story. Mordecai has a 75-foot gallows ready, or Haman has a 75-foot gallows ready to hang Mordecai from, because he hates him so much. He thinks he's going to be honored by the king. So he puts out this elaborate plan, and the king says, yeah, now go do that for the guy you hate. And not only that, but Haman is the one who has to put the robe and the crown on Mordecai. He has to put him on the horse. And guess who has to escort Mordecai through the town as the people cheer and ooh and ah over the one on the horse who had pleased the king? And then, it's time for the banquet. And it's Esther, and it's Xerxes, and it's Haman. And when the banquet starts, Xerxes says to Esther, what can I do for you? Ask anything you want. Even if it's half my kingdom, I'll give you whatever you want. And Esther says, I ask that my life and the lives of my people will be spared. And now she has revealed herself as a Jewish person. For my people and I have been sold to those who would kill, slaughter, and annihilate us. If we had been merely sold as slaves, I could remain quiet, for that would be too trivial a matter to warrant disturbing the king. And Xerxes says, what do you mean your people have been set to be annihilated? He said, who's done such a thing? And Haman's there. And Haman knows. And Esther says, it's him. And Haman's in need of a new pair of pants. That's what I read into it. Because it says, Haman grew pale with fright before the king and queen. Then the king jumped to his feet in a rage and went out into the palace garden. Haman, however, stayed behind to plead for his life with Queen Esther, for he knew that the king intended to kill him. And he's not wrong. Because Xerxes is reminded about the 75-foot gallows that Haman had built. And what seems like a good idea to the king, he decides to use the 75-foot gallows to hang Haman. And then the story just gets more interesting. It says, on that same day, King Xerxes gave the property of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. So Haman had become an enemy of the Jews and an enemy of the queen who he didn't know was a Jew, and to Queen Esther. Then Mordecai was brought before the king, for Esther had told the king how they were related. The king took off his signet ring, which he had taken back from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai to be in charge of Haman's property. So Haman wanted all the Jews annihilated, and Esther, the Jewish queen who had become an enemy of, got all of his stuff when he died. And then Esther has Mordecai called in, the signet ring, which could be used to issue a decree, by the way. You would seal it with the signet ring. And that's what Haman had been able to use. And now that gets given to him. And then all of Haman's stuff, Esther goes, here you go, Mordecai. I guess you're not going to be hung on the 75-foot gallows because there's Haman. You know, and all that. So then when they talk about the decree that had been issued that was to happen the next year about the annihilation of the Jews, the king says, well, I can't undo that. But now, Mordecai, since you have the signet ring, you can issue a new decree. So I can't stop this from happening, but you can do this. And he says, the king's decree gave the Jews in every city authority to unite to defend their lives. They were allowed to kill, slaughter, and annihilate anyone of any nationality or province who might attack them or their children and wives, and to take the property of their enemies. So, the New Living Translation says that on March 7th of the next year was when all this happened. So on March 7th, the two decrees of the king were put into effect. On that day, the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, but quite the opposite happened. It was the Jews who overpowered their enemies. And then the story goes on to give us a little bit of insight into why it was the Jews who overpowered their enemies. It says, for Mordecai had been promoted in the king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the... I think many of us are Esthers. That we are put in the position we are in for such a time as this. We are put in the position we are because God knew that someone around us would need us in that position at that time. You all have been that for me and my family. God has put you in my life for such a time as this in many, many ways. And I hope that I have been that for some of you, that God has put me in this position for such a time as this. And I will tell you that there are times, like for Haman, when he was so caught up in the things that were going on, that it was difficult for him to see all the good things around him. I will tell you that there are times like that. There are times like that for me, and there are probably times like that for you. And so what I would challenge each and every one of us today is to step back from the things that are the challenges. I don't know, some of you guys are wired much differently than I am, but I spend 90% of my time thinking about the challenges and the problems, right? And then I'm able to step back and 10% of me goes, oh, well, that was good, and that was good, and that was good, and they did this, and they helped this way, and that was really good. And then, oh, yeah, but whenever that ends, then this happens next. To challenge us to step back and just see the good that God has provided in our lives, the people that God has put in for such a time as this, and the results of what took place. I mean, the entire nation of Israel was rescued because Esther and Mordecai were put where they were put for such a time as this. And so how different can our world be, how different can our lives be, if we embrace for such a time as this, reflect and remember the good, and then be the good in response. So, That's that. Part of my mental juggling today was trying to edit on the fly because of time. And so I know we're a little bit over what we normally are. So I want to thank you for your grace and your patience as we went over a little bit. Hey, maybe you didn't even notice. But we'll be about 5 more minutes. Maybe. No. I'll pray for us. We'll roll the preview video, and then we'll be dismissed for the morning. So God, thank you for today. Thank you for this incredible story. Thank you for this incredible story of not just Esther, but Esther and Mordecai, who were willing to stand for what was right, willing to put themselves in a position for such a time as this. Help each of us to become Mordecais and Esthers in our own right, and put us where you would have us for such a time as this. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.